Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 299 of Dogcast Radio, in which I'll be giving my verdict on some AITA and AIBU questions and bringing you the dog news stories you need to know. Let's start with dogs' brains, specifically dogs' brains shrinking over time. Now, don't panic. We're not talking about individual dogs' brains, but hundreds, thousands, millions of dogs over time. The research was carried out by the French National Centre for Scientific Research and looked into long-term brain size evolution in the wolf-dog lineage. They compared the endocranial volumes of 185 modern and 22 prehistoric wolves and dogs, ranging from Western Europe to Australia and spanning the pleniglacial, that's 35,000 years ago, to late Neolithic, that's 5,000 years ago. The results revealed that Pleistocene, so-called protodogs, show no brain size reduction compared with coeval Pleistocene wolves. Instead, they observed a slightly larger relative endocranial volume in the 35,000-year-old proto-dog from Goyer, which could suggest increased behavioural flexibility in the presence of humans. Now, by contrast, the late Neolithic dogs showed a drastic brain size reduction, 46%, with endocranial volumes compared to modern small terrier and toy breeds. So researchers speculated that the anxious and wary temperaments of these late Neolithic dogs, induced by the brain tissue reorganisation associated with such a size reduction, could have served an alerting purpose among the many other potential roles dogs could have played within these late Neolithic socio-ecosystems. So did our choices about which dogs we favoured and chose to live with and gave the benefit of our protection, if indeed that's the way around it works, did we, and in fact we did, affect their brain size? But how did we? It's fascinating research, and what I'm going to do is pop the link in the show notes so you can go and have an explore of your own. But it's really interesting in how we have, in some way, shrunk dogs' brains, but not by adopting them initially, but by living with them. It's really interesting, isn't it? And now onto some humans, and you may think some of them have small brains. So the first AITA question is, AITA for telling my brother he can't bring his dog on our family weekend away. Now again, I will pop all these links in the show notes so you can go and have a read for yourself and see some of the replies. And they are worth checking out because some of you agree with, some of you don't, some are funny, you know, but it's well worth going and having a look. I will put the link. It's the AITA questions on reddit.com. Okay, so here's the first question. I'm 39, male, and starting to think I've started a family argument over what I thought was a simple request. My brother, 37, is obsessed with his Labrador. But I told him his lab can't come on a weekend getaway. Now my brother is threatening to skip the trip, and the family is divided. My wife and I had planned an anniversary treat for my parents, as they were celebrating their 50th anniversary. We booked a country house that could accommodate me, my wife, two kids, parents, brother, his wife, and kid. We also booked a private chef for one night. The house has a no pets rule. The chef also needs to be free of pets while setting up and cooking. I thought this would be fine by everyone. My bro has always been glued to his lab, taking her everywhere. When I told my brother about the rules, he got upset and said his lab was like a daughter, so should be there. To try and accommodate her, he suggested leaving the dog in the car whilst the chef was there and said no one would ever find out. I tried to shut this down by saying it was against the rules and I don't want his dog barking or running loose whilst we are trying to relax with the kids. My youngest is also a bit fearful of dogs and pet hair can be a trigger for their asthma. Things got a bit heated and my brother said he'd bring the dog anyway. I lost it a bit and said if you can't do this for a special occasion, then maybe you should stay home. He stormed off and he's now told our parents he's not coming unless the dog's allowed. Mom says I'm being too harsh and should work it out with the house owner and make arrangements with the chef. Dad thinks he's being a bit of a brat, and it's my call since I'm paying for it. I feel bad because me and my bro usually get along great, and I want him there for Mum and Dad. I even offered to cover a dog sitter or kennels for the weekend, but he called that offensive and said the dog isn't just a pet. AITA for sticking to my guns. Do I try to find a compromise, or is my brother out of line here? Now, this person was voted not the a-hole, but I'm going to say he is, in my opinion, the a-hole. This smacks to me of sibling power struggles rather than a dog issue, to be honest. This man is entirely focused on his and his kids' needs, but doesn't give any weight to his brother's emotions. I also think mom and dad aren't helping, taking different sides, name-calling and allotting power. I think some discussion beforehand would have avoided this. But at the end of the day, why doesn't the dog owner arrange his own much more fun celebration for his parents, which his dog can attend? Then the parents could decide whether he or his dog-hating brother is the better party arranger and therefore the better child. Okay, I may have got a little carried away there and brought my own baggage along, but as families grow and babies are added, and the two and the four-legged, it does get harder to arrange get-togethers, and it really isn't helpful if one person tries to take over and doesn't allow everyone involved to have any input into arrangements. Look, what if the dog-owning brother had arranged things and said, "Oh, I chose a venue that doesn't allow kids. Sorry." What's your take? And while we're at it, do tell me what family fights you've had over parties and pooches, or catering and canines, or holidays and hands. Spill the tea. More stressy siblings now. The AITA community and I are in agreement on this next question. See what you think. AITA for threatening to leave my sister's dog at a shelter. My sister asked me to dog sit for her while she went to visit her dad. He's currently in hospital, and it was last minute, so I agreed. Her dog is a little spaniel hound mutt, and I have my own spaniel, so assumed it would be fine, you know? As you can assume, it is not fine. Her dog is awful. He isn't toilet trained, barks, isn't socialised, brackets, growls at kids, constantly jumping, lunges at cars, close brackets. He eats everything. Can't leave him for a second. He howls incessantly. I can't cope with him. I can't even pee. He doesn't let me eat or sleep. I've had to take time off work. On Thursday, I called my sister and told her she needs to send me money to board him because I can't cope. She called me a bleep and told me that I know what puppies are like and I shouldn't be bothering her in a time like this, brackets, with her dad being in hospital, close brackets. Yesterday, he destroyed one of my dad's shirts I had in the laundry basket and it was the straw that broke the camel's back. I told her she had until Monday to send me the money or I'm going to drop him off at a shelter. He's chipped, and our local shelter has a space for abandoned pets. The owners have 14 days to come and collect their pets, so it's not like she'll lose him forever. She got pretty angry and upset and hasn't spoken to me about it. I am struggling still, and I don't know what to do. Our mum thinks I am in the wrong, but also won't watch the dog, so I'm not sure I really care for her opinion. AITA here? Well, I and the AITA community say yes, she is the a-hole here. First and foremost, to take someone's dog on and then dump them at a shelter is a pretty bad betrayal. I mean, legally, if the sister can't get back within 14 days, and who knows how bad things are with the dad's health, so she might not be able to, the dog, and remember, it's a young dog so it could be snapped up quickly, could be adopted to someone else and bam, suddenly her beloved dog belongs to someone else and there's nothing she can do about it. That's awful. I mean, by all means, ask around and get a friend to have the pup. Find good kennels, whatever. But do not basically give someone else's dog away, potentially forever. Now, admittedly, this dog does sound like hard work and in need of a lot of training. So again, why was there not more communication beforehand between the sisters? I really don't get this, even if it was a panic to leave. I really don't understand why there wasn't more communication between them, why the spaniel owner didn't explain how young and needy her dog is. But certainly, I do not think that the answer is for the sister to dump this dog in a shelter. So how would you resolve this? What advice would you give? But certainly, if they ever want to have a relationship in the future, don't dump the dog. Now, no siblings, perfect strangers in this one. Well, imperfect strangers. And this is from Am I Being Unreasonable on mumsnet.com. Who was in the wrong? I have a 9-month-old puppy. We're on holiday and there is a communal dog field for everyone to use. I just wanted to check if it was us or the other owners who were in the wrong in this situation. Our dog was playing in the dog field. Another dog came in while still on its lead and my puppy ran over to the other dog. I will admit that he was jumping up close to the other dog's face, and the dog then told off our puppy, and the owner shouted at us that we should never let a dog run over to another dog like that, and that's how dog fights happen. My dog was just being friendly. Were we in the wrong, or should the other dog not have reacted like that? Brackets, and the owners, close brackets. Okay, now look, this is close to my heart at the moment, because I have a 6-month-old puppy, a Labrador, Rocky, who is, like, basically full-size physically, with a baby brain. And he wants to meet every dog and person and jump on them and then throw himself on his back very near them. Now, I'm managing that. I'm training him. We're working on it. It's normal, but it's a pain, and we're working through it. But this question is another case of a little communication wouldn't have gone amiss and would have made things a lot easier. And depending on whether the field was so vast that calling out to each other wasn't an option, could the newcomer not have asked politely for the puppy owner to pop her pup on a lead? Could the puppy owner not have called, "Just a minute while I put the lead on," and then they could have negotiated whether they wanted them to meet? I mean, ultimately, yes, I do think the puppy owner is at fault here and should have got their dog on lead quicker. But that said, if it's a dog field, does it have rules in place? Is it an off-lead or an on-lead area? But basically, however old your dog, they shouldn't be running up to other dogs or people uninvited for their own safety as much as for the other dog or person. And talking about being in control of your dog and being considerate, let's look at another question on the Am I Being Unreasonable section of Mumsnet. I am a dog owner and a dog lover, but as the tourists descend on my town at this time of year, the appalling dog owners arrive. AIBU to think this is a bare minimum for dog ownership. If your dog doesn't have a bomb-proof recall, keep it on a lead or on a long line. Keep your dog on a lead next to roads. It's just idiotic not to, even if you feel your dog is bomb-proof. Do not allow your little fluffy to approach an on-lead dog without asking. Your dog might be friendly, but can you guarantee that the other dog is? If your dog is off-lead, keep it in your sight at all times. Do not allow little Fluffy to jump up at people. If you can't stop them, get them on a lead. If your dog is playing with others, for goodness sake, supervise them and put a stop to it instantly if your dog appears uncomfortable or overexcitable. Your dog is not well-trained just because they can give a paw, do a twirl, roll over, etc. Good training is about recall, focus on their owner, behaviour while meeting others and behaviour while playing, stopping when told, not jumping up, not excessive barking, etc. AIBU to think this is the bare minimum dog ownership? Okay, I totally agree with this one. I believe every time we step outside our house with our dog, we should be the best ambassador for dog ownership that we can be. And if things go wrong, like I say, with Rocky being a puppy, he is far from fully trained, so sometimes he will jump up a person, for example. So before I let him meet anyone, I make it clear that he may jump up. Although I do my best not to allow that to happen, if it does happen, I ask him to sit and I apologise to the person and I check they're okay. So for me, it's about aiming to be the best you can, taking responsibility for mistakes which happen and sort of damage limitation and good PR. And one big one to add to that list is scooping the poop. Don't ever let your dog poo and leave it. What would you say is the bare minimum of good dog ownership? Back to Reddit.com now. And this one really made me laugh, as well as made me a bit sad, and I hope you'll see why. This one's called Dog Sitting Job Turned Out Way More Intense Than Expected. Just venting and looking for perspective. Hey everyone, just need to vent and get a gut check on whether this situation was as unreasonable as it feels. I took a 4-day, 3-nights dog sitting job. On paper, it seemed manageable. The care sheet said I could leave for up to 2 hours at a time, which felt fair. The owner seemed very type A, which I can usually handle. I don't mind following a specific routine. But in practice, it's been incredibly restrictive and honestly exhausting. The owner has been texting constantly, often several times an hour, asking for photos and detailed updates. I've sent over 40 pictures so far and have been told I'm not sending enough. I let them know in advance that I'd be working remotely during the stay, and they were okay with it. But then the tone shifted, like I should be more actively engaged with the dog at all times, and we're not really being normal about me working. The biggest issue is how limited I've been in simply stepping outside. The instructions said not to be gone for more than 2 hours at a time, which I've fully respected. But now they're pushing back if I leave at all. They've asked me to order food in rather than go out, and even offered to place the order themselves. For context, I've only left 3 times total, once to get food, once for a short walk, and once more to grab food. Each time I communicated clearly and was well within the window. The dog is perfectly fine, well cared for, relaxed, and following his routine. But the whole setup has started to feel like house arrest. I signed on to dog sit, not to be under constant surveillance with no flexibility to even leave the house for basic needs. I know there's nothing I can really do at this point, and I won't be working for them again. But I'm honestly just frustrated with myself for not asking more questions or seeing this dynamic coming. Lesson learned. Would love to hear from others. Is this as over-the-top as it feels? And what kind of rate would actually be fair for something this demanding? Thanks for letting me vent. It's been a long few days. Aw, now, I can see both sides, but I really have to come down on the side of the dog owner with one big proviso, which we'll come to. Okay, anytime we leave our dogs, yes, I want as many photos as the person with my dog will send. And in between updates, I worry like crazy. I try to hold that crazy in check and cling to the thought that everything will probably be okay, but it's tough, because basically, I'm leaving my child with someone. I mean by child, a dependent and a sentient little being who relies on me for safety, healthcare, entertainment, everything. Pretty much how a child does. So trusting someone to meet all those needs in my place is a big leap of faith. But I realise that it's also a big ask to require someone to do all that and send me twice hourly photos, for example. And here again, this is where communication is vital. And I said I'm on the side of the dog owner with one proviso. And that is that I'm not actually convinced that they've really done due diligence with choosing this dog sitter. Because from the sound of it, this is a fairly inexperienced sitter. And we all have to start somewhere. But this person doesn't seem to get the dog-dog-parent bond. Which suggests to me they don't have a dog of their own and maybe have never had a dog of their own. So how can they be a good caretaker for my dog? So yes, I get it's a pain for the dog sitter. And it does seem like the owner is demanding more than they initially asked for. But hey, they're missing their baby, so cut them some slack. Anyway, there you go. Did you agree with my take or not? I'd love to hear your reactions and do send me any doggy dilemmas you spot, which I can stick my nose in and give my verdict on. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. I want to bring a few news stories to your attention because you never know when sharing information could save a life. I love tulips, but did you know they're toxic to dogs? And Gemma Ladwich, whose three-year-old Springer Spaniel Bobby died 3 hours after visiting Farmer Copley's Tulip Festival in Pontefract on the 17th of April, said she'd not previously been aware that the flowers could be fatal to dogs when ingested. So I'm putting that link in the show notes at our website, dogcastradio.com, so you can find out more. But beware tulips. Don't let your dog near them. In the UK, we generally have fairly benign wildlife, but two dogs recently were bitten by adders. Now, the golden retriever involved who was bitten made a full recovery, but a spaniel very sadly died. So this is a serious issue and one we need to be aware of, with adders in the UK currently coming out of hibernation and basking in the sunshine. And when a dog surprises them, they can bite. It's probably best to keep dogs on a lead and not let them romp through any long grass just now and exercise them in safe areas. I'm going to finish today's podcast with an uplifting story from Toronto about photographer Jack Jackson, who is celebrating rescue dogs, having loved and lost his own rescue dog, Jet. Over the next month, passengers moving through Billy Bishop Toronto City Airport may notice a new kind of friendly presence on their journey. Terminal partner Newport Aviation, in partnership with Jack Jackson Photography, NutriCanine and Toronto Animal Services, is proud to present Dogs in Flight, a month-long photo exhibit celebrating rescue dogs and the beauty of second chances. The exhibit runs from the 20th of April to the 20th of May in the airport's first floor atrium. Featuring 10 striking photographs of rescue dogs by Toronto-based photographer Jack Jackson, the exhibit invites travellers and members of the public to pause, reflect and consider the enduring impact that these dogs have on our lives and the positive impacts of rescue dog adoption both on the animals and their new families. Dogs play an important and meaningful role at Billy Bishop Toronto City Airport. From the comfort and calm provided to passengers and employees by St John Ambulance Therapy Dogs, to the essential work performed by canine teams supporting security and screening partners. Quote, "The passenger terminal at Billy Bishop Airport is more than a place people pass through. It's a reflection of our community," said Eve Wiggins, Chief Operating Officer of Newport Aviation. "Through Dogs in Flight, we're proud to partner with organisations that share our values and our belief in giving back. Dogs have given so much to our passengers, whether through therapy programmes or critical working roles, and this exhibit is one small way we can help shine a light on dogs in need of care, advocacy and adoption." End quote. The exhibit also highlights the power of photography to tell meaningful stories and foster connection. Known for his signature style, wherein he captures dogs mid-flight, Jackson's work reveals each dog at their most expressive, a moment that reflects not just movement, but transformation. Quote, "We're so lucky to have dogs in our lives," said Jack Jackson. "So often, rescue dogs help us just as much, if not more, than we help them. When surrounded by love, we all have the chance to fly. Every one of these photos represents a dog with a story and a chance at a new beginning. I'm grateful to partner with Newport Aviation, Nugi Canine and Toronto Animal Services to share these stories in a space where so many people can see them and hopefully be inspired to support adoption." The exhibit will culminate on May 20th, 2026, National Rescue Dog Day, with a rescue dog adoption event held in the airport atrium. Further details about that event will be shared closer to the date. And for the full story, do check out our blog on Dogcast Radio. And again, I will put the link in the show notes. That's all we have time for now, but you can always keep up to date with us on our social media and via our website. So until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. You know, I can't take my dog to the park anymore because all the ducks keep trying to eat him. It's my own fault for getting one that's pure bred.